The entire top of the mountain, of course, is blowing consistently, probably since about 8:30 this morning when the first eruptions occurred. They appear to be coming very much from the cone of the volcano and blowing about 2 miles above the crest of the mountain.
Two vastly different disasters with two similar timelines.
What we're seeing on the mountain is that the top of the mountain is entirely shrouded in an eruptive cloud, but there is a cloud rising from the north flanks of the mountain that extends out about 10 miles. I think what we're seeing is something that would probably be a hot ash fall into Spirit Lake. I think it does not look good for people in that area now.
On the anniversary of the deadliest volcano eruption in U.S. history, Mount St. Helens has lessons for us as we navigate a global health and economic crisis 40 years later. It is Monday, May 18th, 2020. I'm Ian Costello, and you are listening to the COIN Podcast Network coverage of the coronavirus pandemic.
From our studios in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is a COIN 6 digital exclusive.
Good afternoon. I'm Ken Will, along with Kirk Matthews in the Channel 6 newsroom. Here's what's happening. Mount St. Helens has erupted. It is a major eruption. We do not know for sure if any lava has come out of the mountain at this point. We do know scores of people are missing. Five people are known dead in the wake of the most violent volcanic eruption yet on the mountain. The mountain erupted again at 8:30 a.m.
I started working on a podcast to mark the 40th anniversary of the eruption of Mount St. Helens back in October. I had hours of interviews, dozens of pages of notes, and decades worth of archive material. But then, work changed for everybody.
Today, the World Health Organization officially announced that this is a global pandemic. Given the explosion of the COVID-19 virus in our state and globally, I will sign a statewide executive proclamation later today, temporarily shutting down restaurants, bars, entertainment, and recreational facilities.
We have agreed on a plan called Stay Home, Stay Healthy, which is both an order and a public awareness campaign.
By the middle of March, it was pretty obvious that planning for the project was going to be at least postponed, if not picked up and put away entirely, thanks to the coronavirus. Then, last week, a five-word tweet seemed to connect the two.
Shuli Wasserstrom is the social media manager for COIN 6 News, and Shuli, we get a lot of story leads by mining social media.
Absolutely. Every day, we see things that are posted on Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, Instagram, that lead us to stories that we would have never found otherwise, because social media is a way to connect communities and we find valuable news through it every single day.
So speaking specifically about Twitter here, because that's where this story kind of cropped up and got our attention, how many people or organizations is COIN following on Twitter?
Hundreds, if not thousands of people, but organizations, hundreds, and those organizations who are active on social media have become reliable sources for us.
A lot of the people and organizations we follow are from government agencies or elected officials, right?
Absolutely. The vast majority, I'd say, especially because those are verified sources that we can use that information verbatim without having to confirm it through another channel. So, that can be from President Trump to Oregon Governor Kate Brown to the Oregon Zoo or the city of Seaside or even the Oregon Coast Aquarium. Any organization that has an official social media account is fair game to us, essentially.
One of the elected officials we follow is Washington Governor Jay Inslee. He's pretty good about tweeting and provides some pretty good information on a fairly regular basis. Thursday, May 14th, he tweeted out something that seems to connect the coronavirus pandemic to the circumstances surrounding the 1980 eruption of Mount St. Helens.
Yep, he tweeted out, quote, "We should listen to scientists."
In the spring of 1980, scientists predicting a major eruption of Mount St. Helens convinced officials to order closures of some of the areas surrounding the mountain, areas that included logging operations, summer cabins, and popular tourist resorts. A decision that echoes some 40 years later as Governor Jay Inslee tries to steer his state out of the shutdowns that came along with the coronavirus.
And this was actually a retweet, right?
Yes, it was. He retweeted something that the Washington Department of Emergency Management had tweeted the day before that said, 40 years ago today, people pushed the state to reopen areas around Mount St. Helens, citing tourism and the economy against advice of scientists. 5 days later, the volcano erupted.
And we learned when we followed that path down that that Washington Department of Emergency Management tweet was actually a retweet of the U.S. Geological Survey volcano account that basically said science was ignored in the days leading up to the 1980 eruption.
There's no question that's what he was implying, and that's what those other organizations were implying. You know, he's a huge climate change activist. So for him to go through that channel makes sense for him sort of naturally to use that almost, we could say, metaphor.
There is a common misconception about Mount St. Helens. Thanks to the way it exploded in such a catastrophic way on May 18, 1980, there is a belief that it came as a surprise.
It is one of the biggest eruptions to have hit the area or hit the mountain since it began erupting about a month or 2 months ago.
Starting last fall, I had several conversations with Mount St. Helens guru and Portland State University geology professor Dr. Scott Burns about the warning signs the mountain was giving off for months prior to the eruption.
The mountain came back to life March of 1980. And we knew that something was happening because earthquakes were occurring. And we had some seismographs up there because all of our volcanoes have some seismographs. But they were picking up earthquakes. And then the particular types of earthquakes that they were picking up in March were swarms, very, very small magnitude. And it's showing that magma is moving up underneath the volcano.
In both the eruption and the coronavirus pandemic 4 decades later, by mid-March, there were signs that something unprecedented was on the horizon.
My name is Seth Moran, and I'm a seismologist and also currently right now serving as the scientist in charge at the U.S. Geological Survey's Cascades Volcano Observatory in Vancouver, Washington.
Mount St. Helens kind of woke up late winter, early spring 1980. Mm-hmm. Can you walk me through what was actually going on with the mountain?
Really, it really did start with a bang, with a magnitude 4.2 on March 20th. And that was sort of the first sign. For the first 24, 36 hours, there was uncertainty about that until the rate of earthquakes started increasing instead of decreasing, which, you know, if it's a main shock kind of tectonic earthquake, the biggest earthquake happens and then earthquakes start tailing off with time. And in this case, the big earthquake happened and then they started increasing with time.
Near the end of World War I, the Spanish flu infected a quarter of the world's population. An estimated 50 million people died.
Here in the spring of 2020, a lot of people tried to lean on the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic as an historical roadmap for what we could expect to see as the coronavirus spread around the world. Before the spring of 1980, it was the work of two geologists who discovered the danger lurking underneath the rounded peak of Mount St. Helens.
And that's where Dwight Crandall and Don Molyneux started in the early 50s, working for the U.S. Geological Survey. And they were assigned really the Pacific Northwest and the Cascades. While they were working up on Mount Rainier, they kept on finding this ash, that it was not a Mount Rainier ash. They said, where are these from? And eventually, they realized they were from Mount St. Helens. And then they realized that Mount St. Helens was an explosive volcano. And then in 78, they came out with their classic paper saying, this is a volcano that is going to erupt before the end of the century, and it's going to be a big one.
Seth Moran from the Cascades Volcano Observatory explains how Crandall and Molyneux and their warning from 1978 took center stage less than 2 years later.
Right from the get-go, as soon as it woke up and started getting explosions, the Crandall-Molyneux report became, you know, front and center. And there was lots of concern about the possibility that St. Helens was leading up to something similar to what had been seen in the geologic record. The University of Washington scientists were aware that of the work of Crandall and Mullineaux. And so when these earthquakes happened, they were the folks that got called by the UW and basically said, you know, this we've got something going here and we need you guys to come out.
As the situation in Southwest Washington and the wilderness surrounding Mount St. Helens began to evolve from one of concern to urgency and eventually emergency, plans were drawn up to evacuate people from near the mountain.
They eventually drew the red zone. This is a zone that we don't want people to be in. And this was set up with the geologists. Geologists working with the emergency managers. Dixie Lee Ray was the governor of Washington at that time. She was a scientist, PhD, and she got involved in all of this. And they said, let's listen to the geologists. And the geologists said, well, we think that the eruption is going to occur to the north side just because of the bulges building up on that side. But they didn't realize it was going to be humongous.
As Seth Moran explained, the red zone and a subsequent blue evacuation zone were based on the work of Crandall and Mullineaux.
The primary science was the basis for the hazard maps that were generated were the mapping efforts that had been done by Crandall and Mullineaux. And you know, the red zone and the blue zones were a combination of the scientific awareness and sort of boots on the ground kind of considerations about where different interests were important.
Forty years after the eruption and in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic, I had a conversation with Brian Turbush. He is the earthquake and volcano coordinator for the state of Washington's Emergency Management Division. We talked about what takes priority when it comes to managing an emergency.
First priority is saving those lives. It's all about preserving life safety first, followed by protecting property, followed by protecting the economy and environment.
Turbush told me, planning for emergencies, practicing how to respond, and controlling the flow of information is critical in coordinating disaster response.
One thing that really goes into it is setting up scenarios. So for example, in 2016, we had the Cascadia Rising exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And we simulated that the Cascadia subduction zone had a magnitude 9 earthquake and a tsunami, and tried to just kind of see what everybody would do. And a big part of those exercises is then you can look at what happened and then you can address gaps.
Any decision during an emergency, whether it is to evacuate homes in the face of a wildfire, close campgrounds before a volcano erupts, or mandate social distancing to deal with a pandemic, is subject to change and to criticism.
There's always uncertainty involved in these things, so we're trying to make the best decision and get the best information so that people can make decisions that affect their life safety, that affect their property and the economy and things like that, with the limited amount of information that we have. And we're really improving the way we can collect that information, and it's always updated, but there will always be uncertainty.
There's always the potential of being wrong.
Yes, for sure.
For many, a prolonged evacuation order of the communities and wilderness surrounding Mount St. Helens in the spring of 1980 was not acceptable. Hundreds of people lived there, the area was home to a massive logging operation, and the busy summer tourist season was on the horizon for lakeside retreats and resorts in the mountain's shadow.
I think that we've seen in crises around the world, eruption crises, but also with other kinds of natural disasters like hurricanes and tornadoes and floods, you know, there's always this push and pull between getting out of the way and staying put. There's always this sort of narrative about what is it that people need to do, and that sort of boils down to uncertainty. There's always uncertainty in natural hazard events, and humans have a hard time with uncertainty, and we react differently to it.
While the ground was shaking occasionally, Brian Turbush explains that for the general public, there were no obvious signs that something terrible was imminent.
One of the challenges is you can see that something is happening at the volcano, and you have these experts coming out to say, we have instruments that are telling us something is happening. But it's really hard to see. The volcano expanding at 5 feet per day on this bulge on the north side of the mountain is not a subtle signal at all for instruments. But it's really hard for people to see, which people tend to make decisions over.
5 days before the eruption of Mount St. Helens, at a meeting with emergency planners and community leaders, there was a discussion over expanding the evacuation zones.
an idea that faced strong opposition from area business leaders, who saw a bigger threat from the closure of the area and a loss of business than they did from the volcano.
So when people are telling you this is happening and it's actually affecting your life where you might have to move out of an area, it's understandably difficult for people to accept that sometimes. But we're trying to use that decision, and the locals are trying to make the best decision for people's life safety and say, hey, the only way you're going to survive this is actually to get out of the way.
Something that emergency managers were taking into consideration then and would today.
We do care about the safety, and we're going to try to balance that as well as possible with economic needs. But again, life safety is always first.
Our job is to provide the scientific perspective and try and give people the information that they need to make informed decisions.
That'll about wrap it up for now. We're going to be back shortly. We have no scheduled time. We will continually update the story throughout the afternoon. Further details on Newsroom 6 at 5 and a 30-minute special recapping the day's activities on Mount St. Helens tonight, again at 8 p.m. Stay with us this afternoon.
This has been a Mount St. Helens news update from Newsroom 6. Stay tuned for additional reports throughout the day.
In all, 57 people were killed by the eruption of Mount St. Helens on May 18, 1980. Geologist Scott Burns told me about one of them, who had ignored the advice of scientists and refused to leave.
There was only one person that was in there illegally, and that was Harry Truman.
A Coin 6 news crew caught up with Truman days before the eruption.
84-year-old Harry Truman was the not-so-willing. Sheriff's departments offered transportation, but Truman refused. As late as Saturday, May 17th, Truman confirmed he would not leave the serenity and beauty of his Spirit Lake home.
I had some people yesterday ask me why the hell I stay there and what I'm doing up there. That's my life. Spirit Lake and Mount St. Helens is my life, folks. I've lived there 50 years. It's a part of me. That mountain and that lake is a part of Truman, and I'm a part of it.
Harry R. Truman refused evacuation orders, and he paid for his decision with his life. Yet, as Seth Moran from the Cascades Volcano Observatory explained, most of the casualties came from places outside the mandatory evacuation area.
One sort of fact out there is that the vast majority of people who died in the eruption were outside the red zone. And so that's just a reflection of this event was, in fact, larger than pretty much anybody expected it to be.
And while the eruption of Mount St. Helens on May 18th, 1980 was far bigger than even Dwight Crandall or Don Mulineau had envisioned, some of those lives could likely have been saved if the evacuation zones had been expanded, as emergency planners wanted to do 5 days before the eruption. Brian Turbush from the Washington State Emergency Management Division sees parallels between what happened in 1980 and what we are going through with the coronavirus pandemic right now.
Decisions are being made not by volcanologists in this case, but the advice is coming from public health officials and people who have worked on at least understanding and modeling pandemics. Things are changing constantly, the information, and we're trying to model something. At least with a volcano, the interesting thing is we've seen these all over the world. We have a lot of experience with them. You have some guess as to what it might do. But one thing that's extremely difficult to model is human behavior. And we don't even know all the details about specifically how this is transmitted, whether it can flare up again after someone's had it. So we're trying to build these models, make these decisions. And again, this is invisible to a lot of people. And it's really challenging to get the message across.
Which brings us back to where this started. A tweet from Washington Governor Jay Inslee on May 14th, 2020, that said simply, quote, "We should listen to scientists." And it brings us back to my conversation with Coin 6 social media manager, Shuli Wasserstrom.
Shuli, do you assume that Governor Inslee was trying to make a point about listening to scientists now when it comes to how we are handling reopening the economy while the coronavirus pandemic is still such a threat to human lives?
There's no doubt that that's what he was trying to imply in how he feels. He's made it very clear that he doesn't want to reopen too soon and that he disagrees with what other governors around the country are doing and President Trump himself.
For for much more coverage of the 40th anniversary of the eruption of Mount St. Helens, head to coin.com. That does it for me today. I'm Ian Costello for the Coin Podcast Network. Take care of yourselves, stay safe, and we will talk to you soon.
The Coin6 Podcast Network is your home for all sorts of content you can't find anywhere else. Visit coin.com/coinpodcast to see our entire library. And you can always subscribe to all of the Coin6 podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.